All right, call Gemma. Tell her I need her at the cabin.
What do we tell her?
That I need her at the cabin.
Mm-hmm. What if she says no? Your mom can, you know, be a little difficult.
Are you afraid of my mother?
We all are.
All right, let's start this episode. Yeah, I saw it on Wednesday night, and we have been singing Greensleeves parodies around the house for the last few days. Yeah. Like I said, if I were still recapping, the title would be, I have got an eye on you. But if you had to pick one word to describe this episode, what would it be?
Okay. I actually was knew this question was going to come. So yeah. I was thinking about it.
Yay!
And the best I can say is make choices.
Uh-huh.
And or moving forward. And it has everything to do, and as sad as it makes me, it has everything mm-hmm. to do with Nero coming over to Gemma and saying, I want out. I want you to come with me.
You know, I saw that scene and I thought, oh my God, we're going to have to discuss it, because it comes back to what we were saying last week, which is, why is there this great love there? Because he's, I love you, Gem. I love you so much. And I'm like, really? You've known this woman for 3 months. And well, she has. Anyway, the word I had in mind was unraveling. Because Gemma's sanity is rolling down the is just gone at this point. I mean, she's busy doing confessions to babies while creepy Abel watches from a door. And, you know, Wendy's sense of progress has completely unraveled, because now she's like, I'm not going anywhere, Gemma, I'm all in, which is like the exact opposite of everything she's fought for. And Jax's plans unraveled, and you know, it was just, you get the sense that there is literally no way to recover from this for any of them. They're just going to keep on going down the hole. Like, Juice's life is unraveling. Nero psychologically unraveled. That was the impression I got, was that everybody was kind of a hot mess this week.
Well, I mean, look, mm-hmm. again, we did the thing where there's a lot of unspoken dialogue between mm-hmm. scenes. So, yeah. Or between episodes. So mm-hmm. obviously Juice has made a deal.
Yeah.
To live. And in order yeah. to do that, he gets to go to jail.
Yeah.
To kill Lynn. Again, the Machiavellian, you know, plans of Jax.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and it well, looks
for
as
Jax,
though
it's a win-win situation, because if Juice succeeds, Lynn is off the board. And if Juice fails, he gets killed. And then Jax doesn't have to keep kicking that decision down the yard, you know?
Exactly. But at the same time, I'm having a hard time with the idea that what Juice did is mm-hmm. now a hell-worthy offense and a Mr. Mm-hmm. Mayhem offense.
Yeah. It really wasn't.
Nero.
The thing about Juice and the big tragedy with Juice is and again, I've been thinking a lot about this because of the Atlantic piece I'm writing, but the club is essentially operating from rules that may have been relevant and useful 40 years ago. And Juice's big tragedy is being a 21st century guy and trying to understand a code that is utterly unlike anything he's going to have gone with. I mean, Jax grew up in the club, so all of this has been normalized for him. What alarms me more is that, you know, Jax gives all these dumb speeches, but I love you guys. You're my family. You've been there for me, but no one else does. And like, once upon a time, Juice was on the receiving end of those speeches too. And now he's busy plotting to kill Juice, either directly or indirectly. And that just goes to show that I think Jax has become a monster.
In so many words. I mean, again, yeah. Like I was talking to a few people this week and I said, it really, okay, he told Nero something that Nero wasn't supposed to know.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it all worked out. And frankly, in some ways, Nero is part of the crew. Technically, he is not patched yeah. in, mm-hmm. but he's very much a part of the system. Now, the only reason that Jax would be mad is because he got caught in a lie.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the only reason. And for that to be a mayhem worthy offense, I can't get there anymore. It's kind of upsetting to me, but the fact is Juice will outlive a majority of the characters as I see it at this point.
It would be a curveball, and the show certainly throws them at you. That the guy with a death wish who was marked for death is the one left standing at the end of it.
Yeah. In some ways it kind of almost makes sense that he could actually rebuild the club in a way that's better.
Yeah.
Even though, you know,
do you think he would though? I mean, this is like Juice isn't a leader.
No, he's not.
No, Juice is not a leader. So I'm not sure. I think one of the things that the show has done very successfully over the course of the run is shown just how lost the young men who come into this club are, and how the club both appeases that sense of being alone and exacerbates it on a very fundamental existential level. It's almost an abusive relationship. It certainly was the case with Opie, because, you know, the whole first season when Opie was trying to make a clean go of it without the club, he was really struggling psychologically. Like, he didn't know who he was. He could see himself only in terms of not being a good father, not being a good provider, not being strong enough to make it without the club, not being strong enough to make it within the club, not being a good enough son for his father to love him, not being a good enough son for his mom to want to stick around. So in many ways, the club was kind of Opie's escape from all of this doubt and the self-loathing he had. And the club was Juice's father for all intents and purposes. I mean, this is how Clay was able to get under his skin so effectively. And the club was Half Sack's next attempt at camaraderie when he got drummed out of the army for losing a testicle. And the club is Jax's sense of identity. You know, and I've noticed this especially among the younger guys. Like, they really seem to need Sam Crow in a way that the older guys kind of don't. Like, the club owns the younger guys, I think, in a way that it does not with the older guys. And this is actually a reason that Rat is so intriguing to me, is because he doesn't seem to have the same weakness in his shell as the other ones do.
Right.
Like, you know, you can pretty much peg Half Sack's damage from mile off. You can pretty much peg Juice's damage. You can pretty much peg Opie's. Jax is the engine that drives this show. But what is Rat?
Well, and it's interesting because Rat's, you know, the way in which he came off with Jax, like, well, what if your mom doesn't want to go? You know, how do I do this? And he's like, what, are you scared of my mom? And then Happy,
And Happy goes, we all are. And that's like the funniest thing. Oh, my God.
I know. It was really strong. But let's back up for just a second. Mm-hmm. The scene that comes after is this whole. Now, I'm not a lawyer and I don't even play one on air.
Yes.
But so if I write something and someone else witnesses it, it becomes motive for murder, because I'm just like, what? And then Tyler is going to deliver this to Marx and it's going to make him back off. I really like this episode. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. There were some really good emotional kind of sparks in it that I really connected with.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, Jimmy Smits, really, I mean, he's really becoming the most, like, realistic player in this entire game now. Like, I feel like I know his character.
I just don't understand. I just don't understand where he's. I love you, Jem, because like I said, what is that rooted in, other than, you know, you're 3 months into a relationship and there's still a healthy amount of lust there?
I don't know. I guess, you know? He just loves her.
Props to Jimmy Smith, because he was deeply, like, he brought the A game to that scene and the tears were there and it was very believable. And he did a great job of selling Nero as a person who knows that he needs to get out and who knows that who's trying desperately for, like, that long shot where I can have both the woman and the life. And he's, trying to appeal to Gemma by saying you can bring the grandkids down and they'll have a peaceful upbringing. And what Gemma should, and you know, this sort of tips you off how far around the bend Gemma has gone, where instead of thinking, yes, you're right, the kids will really thrive down there, she's like, well, yeah, you know, like she may love those children, but she loves them as a feeling, not as an action, if that makes sense. Like there's always love, the feeling, and then there's love that you show through the actions that you do.
Right.
And there's a lot of the former on Gemma's part and not a whole lot on the latter. And well, that became abundantly clear in this episode.
So is she playing the role in the green sleeves of like the Anne Boleyn? But I'm having a hard time figuring like that's the linchpin, but it seems like that would be it. Like she has kind of is not blowing off Nero, mm-hmm. but at the same time, at the end of the near the end of the episode, you see, you know, they're together, and mm-hmm. it seemed like, you know, just real lovey-dovey. You know,
I don't know, the fact that she like the fact that his first impulse when he finds out she's at the cabin, his first impulse is, "Oh crap, they've killed her."
Well, how does he know that? He can't figure that out. There's no way.
Remember, Darvini got killed up there. So there's that. But it should be setting off, for a sane person, it would set off alarm bells if you're like, my girlfriend took off for this cabin up in the woods that her family's club owns, and it's fine because isn't it great that everyone has property up in the Redwoods? It'd be like the normal person's response, and his response is, oh shit, the club went and took her out of the way so that they could kill her and bury her in the woods. Like, that's clearly where he was going with that. And then once he gets there, Gemma lies to everybody all, oh, of course, Nero was just here to help this junkie shake the junk. And, you know, if you're panicking about your lady being whacked and then she lies about why you showed up, there are a lot of alarms in that situation you should be listening to. And he's not going to listen to a single one of them. Like, I find myself getting frustrated with Nero for that reason, because he seems like he's letting his sentimentality make him stupid. Like, well, he's got great horse sense until he's in Gemma's reality distortion ray or something, you know?
Right. And the thing is, this episode, he should have had some sort of leap to, why mm-hmm. was Gemma's truck at the Mayans? Like, yeah. Let me start asking the right questions.
Yeah, and he didn't.
At all.
Yeah. You know, so he's willfully blind in a lot of ways. It's like he's hoping that it's like he's hoping that if I talk about this situation, this is what's going to come to pass. My girlfriend will not be crazy. And
let's just really talk about crazy for a second.
Yeah.
Okay. Gemma just before mm-hmm. she gets shipped off to Camp Killyou.
Yeah, has the panicky confession to the baby.
What? Are you serious? And then, come on, Abel overhears it.
Yeah. Well, so here are my problems with that scene in no particular order. And let me actually pull up my notes on this.
Do it.
Because I did actually quote the confession. So, which is... Gemma confesses Tara's murder to Thomas. The monologue goes, accidents happen for love. They happen for reasons we don't understand. Killing your mommy was an accident, she sobs. It was such an awful accident. I didn't want to kill her. I didn't mean it, sobs more. I loved your mommy so much. And and the know-it-all TV critic part of my brain is like, told you! Because I have been, I say every podcast, I'm like, no, the relationship between Gemma and Tara is the big tragedy on this show. And it just goes to show, like, the reason she's talking to Tara is because she's so overwhelmed by her grief. And she has no way to express her love that this is what she does to redirect and project. So I feel very validated with that.
So are you
with the
saying
fact that Gemma, with the fact that Tara was so significant to Gemma, like I've been calling that for years. And I think that when Gemma was telling Thomas, I loved your mommy so much, you know, she's finally unburdening it, because if she said it to Jax would give her a look like, really? You know, no, you people who love each other don't do the stuff that you did to my wife. Or if she said that to anyone else, they'd be like, of course, whatever. Like, she literally has nobody who can understand how she loved her daughter-in-law. So she tells the child of the woman she murdered. And I love that. That said, I was like, she can say that in front of Abel, but here's the thing, and I say this from having lived with a three-year-old for a year, they are notoriously unreliable witnesses. Like, if Jax is tucking Abel into bed and Abel goes, Daddy, you know, accidents happen sometimes. And Jax is like, oh, they sure do. And Abel goes, you know, Grandma killing Mommy was an accident. You know, it's not like Jax is going to be like, really? Do tell more. He's going to be like, whatever, kid. You know, you got kicked out of preschool for hitting a kid. You're kind of a psycho. You
Jax is going to say, you doing okay, little man?
Yeah.
That's what he's going to say. That
yeah.
He's gonna
kiddle man.
Abel's gonna tell Courtney Love.
You think?
Well, unless Courtney Love was only on that episode.
I don't know. I mean, there's six episodes left. Who knows? Maybe she's in like the back third. Week it's the Courtney Love show, and she hangs out with Lea Michele and they sing show tunes together.
Because here's the thing. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, as a former school teacher,
yeah,
if a child says something to that effect, mm-hmm. you've got to move on it. You have to say,
mandatory reporter.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So.
And they set this up at the, I'm looking back at the 4 minute mark in this episode as Abel is walking by. They explain that he was kicked out of school for hitting somebody else, and so he had to be brought home. And both Gemma and Mundy are like, oh, he's just not doing well. I wonder why not. And I'm like, dude, his mother died 3 weeks ago.
What do you expect?
Like, Gemma, you are supposed to be God's anointed mother or whatever, and you expect this three-year-old to just be like, oh, whatever, changing routine. I haven't been able to go home yet because Mommy's blood is still decorating the walls, but... you know, I'm fine being passed from crow eater to crow eater, and now I'm in this preschool as opposed to the daycare center where I knew everyone was loved. The fact that both Gemma and Wendy seemed really taken aback, I'm like, who the hell wrote this? What are you thinking?
Yeah, this is kind of weird.
Have you known any children?
That's where I start to say, you know what? Sutter did the right mm-hmm. thing with Opie's kids.
By keeping them older and off screen.
Exactly. Yes. By the way, where's, what's her face?
Well, there's like three of them. There's Piper, who is Lila's kid. Okay. And,
But where's Lila been? Off producing?
She is, she's at Red Woody now. She's running it.
Right, but they've been at Red Woody, and we haven't seen her.
We've seen her once or twice.
Okay.
Like, she's doing a lot of editing and mixing now.
She's in the dark room.
When they did Dr. Spunkenstein? Was that it?
Yes.
When they did Spunkenstein's Monster, she was the director.
That's right.
And you know, it was a big rite of passage for her, and Jax made a big deal of, you know, taking care of the widow Opie. And then there was another shot where she's editing a film, and there's a third shot where she mentioned she's going to be in post-production all day. And to me, that was the show kind of quietly saying she's slipping into the position that Luann had.
All I know is she's...
at the beginning of the series, where these guys, I guess as a solid to dudes who are in jail or dead, they basically set up their widows as porn mavens.
Right.
So
she wasn't on set for the Hebrew bagels shoot.
Yeah.
And so that's just like, where are you at?
Oh my God. No, it was somebody else who was at Cox and Bagels.
That's what it was. God. That's all right.
I know. Unbelievable.
That was a little, I was a little like taken aback by that.
That
I was just
a little
like,
anti-Semitic, if you ask me. I mean, I realize that's the point of Sam Crow, but I was like, wow, that's stark there, you know?
Yeah.
And I also had no idea. I did not know there was a niche for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing was like, even in the back shot, like in the background, like you had actual like porn action going on. I was just like, whoa,
like that's not kosher
at all. I was like, usually we don't see pickles and stuff going, you know?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just, this is a little different, but, and yeah. Again, here we go again. Like, I don't know if this is deus ex machina, but, Unser, who, you know, tells Jax, hey, look, Juice is now behind bars, and all of a sudden he somehow has this premonition. Oh, they obviously know something or have put him up to it. There's, I didn't read that at all. I was like, you're really reaching, and unfortunately, you just reached in the right direction.
The thing I found striking, I made a note about this too, Unser was used for a lot of scene transitions this week, where he was kind of used as the transitional dude, or he opened and closed scenes a lot. And I wonder if that was supposed to be just a subtle reminder that he's kind of the bridge between these different parts of Charming.
Look, and I'm still going back to the fact that the guy has cancer.
Yeah, and he's remarkably hale and hearty for somebody who's at stage
he
four.
He really is. He really is.
Yeah. So let's see. What are the other things?
They had the thing around the table
early on where they're discussing juice, and it was just four people around the table. It was Juice, Bobby, Tig, and Jax, and they're looking at their Redwood table, and they're just callously discussing whether or not Juice is going to live or die, and how useful he is to them. And I thought, oh my god, this just shows how conditional their brand of brotherhood is. And then, like, right after I thought that, Jax launches into this, I love you, you're my family, you guys have gone a lot farther than I expected you, type speech. And, like, I was literally rolling my eyes through it. We've heard this 1,000 times, the same way we've heard Jax, you gotta trust me on this. Like, he's always demanding that people trust him, he's always telling people how much he loves them, and nothing he does ever backs it up.
Yeah.
And he's become kind of boring to watch. When he's not deeply unsettling.
Yeah.
Because the one thing I found terrifying about this episode, and this is where Jax was riveting to watch because he was really uncomfortable, is when that poor hooker is cornered by Jax and Nero.
Oh, yeah.
And who was the third guy who was there? Because he was kind of blocking
her.
Yeah. And all three of them have her backed against a wall. And Jax is just sweet talking the hell out of her and recruiting for Diosa. And he's pouring on the charm.
And I thought,
oh my God, he can just switch it on and off. He's not even aware that he switches it on and off. It's just a tool for him. Human connection is just a tool at this point. That to me was terrifying, because how do you have genuine relationships with anybody if human connection is just something you shut off or turn on when it suits you?
Well, and it's honestly at the end of this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he doesn't fully commit to being upset, but maybe it was a little bit of me watching, but it actually seemed that he was upset about Bobby.
Do you think he was upset about Bobby, or do you think he's upset that he's been outthought?
First of all,
it could be both. I mean, I'm willing to entertain the argument that it's both. But
yes.
I think what Marx was doing was Marx was sending a really clear message that you think
he
you
must
are
have
smart,
been.
But I am smarter.
But again, Marx is not on the show right now, which pains me a little bit because that's causing some real problems.
Mm-hmm. He needs to get off of How to Kill People and Get Away with It and get back on.
Well, I mean, look, how's that going to happen now? That show's like blowing up like spades all over the place.
I know. So sad. I'm so sad. It's thriving.
But I mean, there's nothing we can do about it now.
Although in a way, it's kind of funny that they have Marx off screen at this point, because that almost makes him more powerful since he's become unimaginable. But I think Jax was upset because, holy crap, I've just caused a man to lose his eye. And that's terrifying. You know,
that's
a terrifying burden of responsibility, especially when, holy crap, I got my wife killed, is something else that he's grappling with right now.
So we're under the same assumption, I believe. If we don't see death, he's not dead.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I had thought that Bobby might be the first one to go, just because he's got all of that blind faith in the club and he's kind of a fan favorite, and he was a grounding force of, and there's still this perception that he's the grounding force of reason as opposed to a filthy enabler. And so, if Jax's grounding force of reason goes, he's even more untethered and this is a tragedy, blah, blah, blah. I don't know if Bobby's going to die or if Bobby's just going to get mean and disillusioned because he's down an eye.
I could see that, and I could see him being turned.
Yeah.
Potentially.
I don't know.
And at the beginning of this episode, we finally get somebody talking about, again, the missing guy from the heroin heist.
Yeah.
And it's just like, no, duh. why is it taking this long to get to that end point?
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot is going on behind the scenes that, you know, it's kind of obvious to me that they have something to do with what's going on. That's the rat. Mm-hmm. That's the mole.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's and this doesn't really, I would like to hope this doesn't spoil anything. I just got my Entertainment Weekly for next week, and they have the TV listings for October 26th.
Uh-oh.
And the Sons of Anarchy listings. How do you flush out a rat? Well, you're going to want to hold down the toilet handle for sure. And that just makes me suspect that we're going to see something really unpleasant having to do with the bathroom. And I'm kind of dreading it. But yeah, the jury is still a wild card who's out on the table. We don't know what's going to happen to Juice in jail. We don't know what's going to happen to Bobby at this point. Gemma is busy unraveling. And it's only a matter of time before Nero realizes that she's a hot basket case for a reason. And now we have Abel, who's going to walk around and recite his grandma's confession note perfect, because he's just that creepy.
Well, the question is,
which one of these situations explodes first?
How many takes is it going to take to get the able to say it correctly? That's what I want to know.
But, I loathe most child actors. Okay. I mean, it's not their fault. I'm sure they're all delightful people, but it's not a profession for children.
Right. How creepy though was it? I mean, it was almost like a Chucky moment when he did his eyes opened up when he was pretending to sleep.
And I'm going to have to chalk that up to Wendy perhaps not having a lot of experience with kids. But again, if you have a 3-year-old, you can pretty much tell the difference between asleep and awake.
That's right.
They're not great with the poker faces. They're not the world's most reliable witnesses. They ask a lot of questions. You know, if your typical 3-year-old had caught Gemma confessing that sort of thing, it would have been, Grandma, was it really an accident when you killed Mommy? Well, were you sorry? Did you try to fix it? Can we call an ambulance? I mean, they'd be asking all sorts of questions like that.
Right.
And they'd be asking them at the top of their lungs. So there's that. That said, what I really did enjoy is how, because Rat and Happy are so terrified of Gemma, like they went into total hard man mode to deal with her, like, She completely misread them and assumed that they were taking her up to the cabin to kill her. Like, her own paranoia and guilty conscience has just caused her to start seriously misreading situations. And I kind of hope it only gets worse.
It can't get any better.
No, like, we've already established she's out of her mind because she's monologuing to her dead daughter-in-law 5 times a day. And she's confessing to children, and now she's freaked out that people are going to kill her. Like, she literally has no idea of the big mismatch between her internal landscape and what's going on around her. Like, in previous seasons, Gemma could walk into a room, size up the situation in a heartbeat, and then put on this air of competence and restore order and make people feel better about everything. Like, she was the one who handled Tig after he watched his daughter burn to death. You know, she's always the one who's hugging people and letting them know it'll be okay. And she doesn't realize that people still see her that way, when inside her own head, she's just trapped in this prison of self-loathing and guilt and grief.
It's gotten to a point where I still think about this. It's like, wait a minute. Gemma knows she killed Tara, and Juice knows. And I keep thinking in my head, Unser knows.
Well, my guess is that when Juice goes and tries to kill Lynn, he's going to be like, I have no idea why Jax wants to kill you. And Lynn's going to be, he thinks I killed his wife. And Juice is going to be like, no, his mom killed his wife. And then it's like Three's Company, except with a higher body count.
And is Tully getting out of jail? I mean,
I hope not.
I mean, it just doesn't seem like, it seems like he's an inside player at this whole, okay.
Mm-hmm. I think so. I mean, they've got their hillbillies on the outside. They don't need another one.
Yeah, that was strange anyway. And then we're going to have a patch over with the Grim Bastards.
Or so we think we are. Maybe Theo Huxtable will kill everybody. I don't know.
We don't like the Jews, but the Blacks are okay now.
Look, Jax lies to everybody. He lies as naturally as he breathes. He's like, he got it from his mother. And my guess is that what he does is he moves pieces around on his own internal chessboard. And then he kicks the problem on down the line later, you know?
Yeah. And then people get their eyes ripped out. And by the way, I think we are technology savvy enough to know that an iPad just doesn't sit on an on-screen inside of a cardboard box. That just seemed odd to me.
Oh my gosh. Although I was really impressed with like how rich they must be just to keep giving iPads away to everybody they want to send messages to.
Well, I mean,
like,
you know,
like they had that nice clean Tupperware, and I was just imagining like Mark's or the Mark's henchman, you know, the head of security, whatever his name is at this point, being like, all right, I need you to go to Lucky's and I need you to get me a 1-quart blue Tupperware container. You know, just use self-checkout, use cash. No one can trace it that way. All right. LeVar, give me your iPad. No, I just got Angry Birds. No, give me the iPad. We have to record something. You know?
Wait. You want to record on the iPad? That's an iPad too. It's not going to be as good resolution. They're going to be able to see it.
Yeah. Can you imagine like them having a sideline where like it's a 40-minute argument over technological consequences?
That's right.
Bobby Alves is like, are you going to torture me or are you just going to talk specs all day? And they're like, shut up. We're working this out.
That's right. We want to be good looking. It's low light.
I promised my kid that iPad. I have. Who took my bunny on that iPad? No, I'm sorry. We can reboot. I backed it up on Time Machine. So you're okay. You're fine. Just deauthorize his iPad so we can rip out this guy's eye and get it to Charming. That's all we're asking. Take him on for the team.
Just use find my iPad after they watch it, and then you can get it back.
Or you know, because that's I just like the idea that they took it from someone because the alternative, which is that they just had this storehouse of iPads they use whenever they have to intimidate somebody. Like they have some poor low-level guy standing in line at the Apple store every time there's a new release. Okay, I need 20 iPads and 4 iPod Touches and 5 iPhone 5Ss. And can I please have 5 blood red cases?
And they used a white one, and I was just like, that just doesn't make sense either. There were a bunch of inconsistencies in that regard.
Well, it was dramatic posturing. I mean,
maybe.
This whole episode between Abel's ridiculous behavior and Gemma's off the rails confession, and then the whole iPad and Tupperware business, and Jack's inexplicably getting people to trust him mere minutes after he, you know, shot through their door and chased them into a lake and all that. Like,
of course, it was funny on the Twitter sphere. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of what's in the box. Oh, what's in the box from Seven and Brad Pitt.
Is it Gwyneth Paltrow's head? Yeah,
that's right.
Mm-hmm.
God, that was a good scene, though.
Well, it's.
I enjoy. I mean, not Sons of Anarchy. I'm talking about the Seven one was much better.
Ah, yes. The problem I had with that scene the first time I saw it is you've got Kevin Spacey up. Envy was my sin, and you're like, oh, come on, really?
Right.
Come on. So, I always have like the inner governor or the inner critic in the back of my head that spends most of his time shouting, oh, come on, at moments when you're supposed to be swept up in the moment.
Right.
Which is why we end up having discussions on whether or not Dog is Mark's crew has bulk buys and iPads, or do you think maybe they just get them off Craigslist?
My guess is they can't have any trail whatsoever. So they mug somebody when they need it.
Yeah.
They're really easy to find. All you got to do is
idea that they just assault some random hipster who's looking at his iPad.
Well, it's the easiest thing to do,
to
right?
Yes.
Yeah, and they're smart enough to know how to wipe it. So the hipster can't, you know, use the and track them down.
Yeah, yeah.
Or maybe they just waste the hipster right then and there. I mean,
no, because and I say this as somebody who lives right next door to Oakland. If you kill a white hipster, it's going to be a big deal because those people will take the hipster's friends will take to social media and they'll write sad blog posts about the hazards of gentrification, and there will be posters made and mutterings about white flight. Are you laughing because you know this is true?
it makes sense.
Yeah. Whereas, and again, I say this because I live near Oakland. Whereas if it's black on black crime, the press isn't going to care, and the police are going to rank it in order of how bad it looks if they don't take care of it, because the police are vastly underfunded and understaffed and all that. So I would like to hope that the Marx crew actually just goes through Craigslist, because they're like, look, we don't need the hassle of having the police on us for stolen iPads, because this is how you get the Al Capone in jail for tax evasion business. And instead they just go.
I know where they're getting them. Mm. I know exactly where they're, because in the past season, the one with the kind of godmother of the ghetto that stole the truck.
Yes. Oh my God. She had she was played by, it wasn't CCH Pounder, but it was someone else who's equally majestic. Oh God, it was glorious. And she had the two sons, and yes, she harassed the living hell out of them. Oh my God. Oh, the boys were named. It was glorious.
What's his name? It's a singer.
Oh, Luther and Vandross. That's right.
That's what it was.
Yeah. Who played? All right, I'm going to see if I can Google this really quick, because I remember that falling over laughing.
But she said something about iPads.
Yeah.
But that's where Marx is getting his hook.
Oh, that would be awesome. I like how we've thought about this probably more than the people who wrote the scene and the prop masters did.
That's right. I mean, they could have had a whole. I mean, in fact, you could have eliminated some of the storyline, and let's just go and follow Marx's head of security. That was dumb.
You know what? This was not even a few years ago. This was like in 2011. They did this. Wow, you've got a great memory.
Vandross. I have watched the seasons multiple times at this point.
Yeah, this was season 4, episode 3. And they got into trouble because the boys just wanted to buy their mom a new truck with the guns. Oh my God.
Because they had lifted it off of Lemonhead.
Lemonhead. Yeah, Happy's mom. They were at Happy's mom's place.
Yep. And he was like, let's play a little basketball.
Yeah. And you find out that Happy is a clean freak, and Marianne Jean-Baptiste, that's who it is. Vivica. Yes.
There it is.
And Tig was just fascinated by her. Oh, she makes Gemma look like Donna Reed. He swooned because Tig loves it when women slap him around.
And where's Venus been?
I think Tig has probably said baby blow town.
Maybe.
But so as long as we're doing backstory, as in Vivica is now supplying Luther with all of it. Mm-hmm. Vivica is now supplying August Marx with all of his iPads. The other backstory I have in is that Venus has made some fluttery and indirect queries. Oh, Alexander, I'm so worried for you and your dear kind friends. And Tig's like, look, things are really crappy right now. I would really like not to have to watch another woman I love get set on fire. Why don't you stay out of the way?
But where does he send her?
San Francisco.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That would make sense.
Yeah. I mean, either San Francisco or Los Angeles. Although I once saw one of the worst transvestites ever in Glendale, which is a suburb right outside Los Angeles. Like, this guy hadn't bothered shaving. It was really disconcerting. Well, because the makeup was perfect and so was the ensemble. And I was like, is the beard big? So.
Well, maybe a little.
But yes, so in the alternate universe you and I are writing, we've figured out the iPad connection. Venus is safe for now. Presumably, Courtney Love is fielding complaints from classroom aides that Abel is a psychopath.
Maybe Venus and Tiggs raise Thomas and Abel.
I can't see them doing that.
Well, that's an extrapolated universe.
Mostly because one of the common characteristics of almost all these dudes is they're really not what you would call hands-on fathers.
Yeah. Unser's cured, and he seems to be more hands-on than any man in the known setting. And since he doesn't have cancer, he can raise them. I mean, look, he's cured. Violence cured.
Yeah. Well, if violence cures cancer, then, oh, Lord. No, I don't even want to follow that to its logical conclusion.
Wow.
Hey.
But anyway, but regardless.
Actually, this raises a good question. Who's going to raise the boys? I mean, I think we've established at this point that Jax's is not going to.
I mean, they're making it fairly obvious mm-hmm. that Wendy is going to be a part of this.
If she's not dead by the end of it.
I just don't see why she would die. Well, she doesn't necessarily know anything except that she knew where Juice was, but she doesn't have to ever say anything about that.
Yeah, but this club jumps to so many conclusions at the drop of a hat. You know, there's nothing for them not to be like, oh, well, since she knew something about Juice and, you know, blah, 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 women have to die on this show at a rate of one every two episodes, you know, then they could kill her off that way. I think Wendy is marked for death because Sutter has always made it pretty clear that people have to reap the harshest possible penalty for the choices they make, you know, which is why Tara died, which is why Donna died, which is why Clay died, which is why, you know, which is why Opie died. Like, all of them had made choices where they put like a small personal gratification over like the greater moral principle. And Wendy's clearly doing that here. And so she's going to be punished for it.
I don't know. I just feel like she's made.
He's got a real punishment thing going on. And, you know, like before, the punishment for her messing with Jax and Tara's family was that Jax took away her sobriety and she lost her girlfriend. And, you know, now she's come back over to Gemma like some sort of Stockholm syndrome victim. And there's going to be punishment for that, too, because we're clear that Gemma poisons everything she touches.
Yeah. And Wendy's not even acting smart. Like at first I thought maybe she was using angles.
Yeah, yeah.
Like in episode 1 and 2, like it was clear, she's got her head on her shoulders. She's mm-hmm. working angles to get to the boys.
Yeah, exactly.
Now it's, well, you can get to the boys, but you got to help me with Juice. But it was kind of a this for that, but,
quid pro quo.
Right. But I don't know. I never see that real strong connection with the two. And besides that, at this point, like at what point do we have Abel saying, you're my mommy?
Or if she tells him and he's like, no, you're not my mommy. My mommy was killed in an accident. Oh my God. That's how it's going to happen. She's going to crack and she's going to say it. And he's like, no, you're not my mommy. My mommy was killed by my grandma. You can't be my mommy because I want you to live. And she's going to be like, oh crap. What have I got?
How about that?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's how it's going to go now.
How about that?
Yeah.
So who kills Gemma?
Wendy? Do you really think she dies?
I think yes.
You think she dies?
I and it's going to come from. It's either going to be Abel. It's going to be Abel, his teacher, or Wendy. Or Unser.
I don't think Unser can kill Gemma. I mean, they've made it pretty clear his fatal weakness has been his love for her.
Yeah, but I think that's over with now. There's a distance between him because he was like, well, I'm going to get my stuff and get out of here. Oh, I don't want you to leave. And that hug was really like, you could kind of tell Unser was like, I'm kind of done with this.
Yeah. Well, how many times can she press against him and tell him how she loves him without putting any teeth behind it?
That's right.
You know, I mean, she's friend zoning him for forever.
Right. Eventually, he's got to say, look, I don't have a whole lot of time left. Or maybe I do.
Because, you know, my cancer has not slowed me down at any point in these past 7 years.
In fact, it's speeded me up.
It's only been like 4 years. When you think about the timeline of the series, it's only been 3 years.
Yeah.
Like over the course of 3 years, like half of the club has been killed. Jax has been widowed. Gemma has been widowed. They've killed off an entire United Nations worth of different delegations of villain. It's been like the worst 3 years in the history of charming law enforcement.
And this is the worst one. Yes. And it's only been 15 days. Somewhere in this episode, they actually say it. Like, mm-hmm. It has been 15 days since the events of last season.
Yes, 15 days.
That's crazy. No one can move that fast.
Well, the other thing that kills me is, you know, Jax was in a fetal position over frickin' Donna for 3 days straight. You know, and yet he's just kind of bouncing around merrily, killing off half of West Oakland here. It's
because it's the end. Look, if
it's
we
the
knew,
last se-
that's
yeah.
it. It that's
it's the
it.
Last season. They're like, come on, we got to get this going.
And that's the worst part is if we were going to at least have one more season, mm-hmm. if we knew that for sure, then things would be riding a very different road.
Yeah. I don't know, man. We're more than halfway through at this point, and all I can think is at what point will the bullpucky really hit the fan, do you think?
I don't know, but this is I really thought we were going to have something serious happen because in my mind because we have some of the holidays coming up.
Yeah. Well, there's they've never skipped Thanksgiving week before, and I know this from having recap for years because I've had to pull myself away on weekends to do it. So episode 8 is the last week of November. That means we have 5 episodes left, which means they'll probably finish the series the first week of December.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, so, you know, it's got to move fast, but I have a feeling that maybe Thanksgiving week, it starts to finally get to the point where there's, you know, you're just surprised at who's left standing.
I think this episode, honestly, though, was probably one of my, I say favorites for the season, uh-huh. only because it felt like there was something happening. I felt like there were characters that were meshing, and I actually, there was some tension. Mm-hmm. Like I actually got caught up in it. You know, when we kind of break it down, I lose a little bit of that, but this
I think
feels
it says
like
something about the power of the composition that you actually have the immersive experience when you're in the middle of it, you know?
Right.
I haven't had that yet this season, but you know, I also blame it on the lengths of the episodes.
They are long.
They've been an hour and a half a piece this year so far.
Well, think about Sherlock was an hour and a half.
But there's like 3 episodes a season.
I know.
So that's a whole different thing. I mean, if you're packing in that wealth of detail, but honestly, sometimes here it feels like it's wheel spinning and it feels a little repetitive. And I wonder if that's intentional or if that's just Sutter wanting to do right by all of his babies before he closes the book on them the last time.
I just feel like there was a lot more done in prior episodes, prior mm-hmm. seasons. I felt like it was way more fulfilling inside of the episode. I think
now that they've done something to Bobby, it certainly gives the club something to do. But I don't know. I'm having a really hard time getting into this season. I mean,
I know.
So tough because I loved the show. Here's the other frustrating thing is I went back. I had to rewatch the season 4 opener because that's kind of the linchpin of the argument I'm making for The Atlantic. There's this scene between Jax and Tara where he's like, I just have to run some guns and get out. She's like, you know, I am a surgeon and I make lots of money. He's like, I can't have my wife supporting the family. And I've basically pinned that as that is the moment it all goes pear-shaped for them. And you know what would have saved that? If Jax had been raised to believe that being a house husband was acceptable. But he starts off the conversation by talking about how much he wants out of the life and how different he wants things to be for his boys and how the thing he's angriest about for his father is that his father didn't take the boys, mow down Gemma, and get out of town. And it made me so sad to watch that and then think about how this season Jax isn't even talking to his kids. He's letting his mother handle them 100%. And he's just become this gun-toting, bike-riding, you know, fine. It has always been thus. It will always be thus. You know, there is no there for Jax Teller. There's just kind of a murderous meat sack going through the motions.
Well, here's one other thing that bothers me slightly. Mm-hmm. Is that this is a motorcycle club. At the mm-hmm. root of it all, without like get rid of all the illegal activity, mm-hmm. it was originally just a club of guys who liked bikes.
Yeah. Well, there was a little bit, what's his face? John Teller was like, I'm alienated from society. But yeah, it was people who didn't feel like they fit in the mainstream. They really liked bikes. They really liked each other.
Right. And it seems like that whole theme has really gone to the wayside. And they've never gotten to that.
No, there's no pleasure this season.
None.
No, there's been very little humor, although I stopped and rewound and watched the whole, are you scared of my mom? We all are. Like, I watched that three times because it was just so funny.
And I think that says something right there, is like those types of, those little quips.
Yeah.
We seem to be hanging on because there's really just no, it's so bleak. And you can only be so bleak for so long.
Yeah.
And it's like, come on. Just give me something nice.
Yeah, it was. It's like the season feels joyless, which it should, because this is the last act of a tragedy. And, you know, there's not going to be a whole lot of catharsis. But I would like to see the pace of the tragedy accelerate a little bit, you know?
Yeah, just
we need to get to the point where Hamlet writes the play and has people perform it, so he can out the liars.
Okay, so are you saying that this season, because for some reason in my head this doesn't jive? In prior seasons, every episode was 40 some odd minutes.
No, because he started getting longer later, like because there were a lot of 90-minute episodes last season and a couple 2-hour ones.
Whew.
So as the ratings for this show have picked up and they've gotten closer to the end and needed to tie up more loose ends, Sutter's gotten more of a free rein with the episode lengths.
Man, I think that's just way too long.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay. Next week's gonna be big.
Yes, next week's going to be big, because we find out whether Bobby lives or dies. We find out whether Juice and Lynn finally get to the bottom of the Gemma-fostered misconception about Lynn's role in Jax's widowhood. We see if this actually moves anything anywhere.
Okay. I haven't seen any other previews, so I have no idea what's transpiring.
But oh, the previews never tell you anything real. It's always strategically...
So we'll probably have some let's go to jail time with Juice.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And with luck, after they do the let's go to jail, they'll also iron out that silly misunderstanding about who really killed Tara.
That's right.
Because honestly, and this should be the point where if Gemma hears about this, this should be the point where she loses her mind and goes full on Ophelia. Is if they're like, oh, well, here's the deal. Juice and Lynn are going to hook up, and then Juice is going to kill Lynn for us, and he'll report back to us when it's done. And Gemma's going to be like, ah! Because if Juice is like, wait, what? They want me to kill you because you killed Tara? No! Not how it works. Like, then Juice has a whole lot more leverage he can take back to the club. And he's not smart enough to think, well, if I kill Lynn, we still have an advantage with the Chinese. He's basically going to be, I don't want to have to kill this guy because then I have 50 Chinese assassins on my case.
Right.
So this is, it's bad for Gemma.
Yeah. All right. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, okay. I'll go with that point that Juice is going to unleash a little bit of knowledge.
Yeah, I think that since Juice is obviously Juice is your loose end. Nobody has wrapped him up. Mm-hmm.
And he didn't do anything wrong. Come on.
No, I'm with you. You've persuaded me.
Sometimes I have that effect. Sometimes I can I can create the airtight argument.
Yeah, there you go.
we can let him live.
Yes.
All right. I think that's one. That's all I've got.
All right. Wow. We will talk about this again next week.
That's right.
All right.
So, we should think about getting Tony on.
Yes, we should.
Just to add a little spice to the action.